Say buenas tardes.
Gracias por la bienvenida.
Bush is on an anti-Chavez tour of South America, ostensibly to spread the propaganda about the glories of American democracy. You remember that, don't you? Huh? Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks a lot for tuning in. The glories of American democracy. I have something to share with you a little bit later in this, probably this first hour, about the glories of democracy. So he's on the trip to kind of offset or attempt to offset the turn towards a more socialistic form of governments in various South American countries, a more equitable, fair, socialistic capitalism is, and I think we're all in agreement here, even people who profit mightily from the capitalist system, they understand what they're doing. I mean, capitalism is really it's an anti-family form of economic system. It's anti-family. It's anti religion. It really is. It's anti, and in that respect, maybe it's good. It's anti everything. Capitalism it destroys, devours, eats, pollutes, and moves on until there's no place left to move on to, which is kind of where we're at now. The South Americans are trying to turn around centuries of exploitation by, as George would say, Norteamericanos, or Europeans, or Asians, and they're trying to turn it around, and Bush, of course, is on his little festive march tour down there, while country after country that he's going to erupts into violence and demonstrations. The sign that I saw among the crowds down that really got to me was the one that has a picture of Bush, and it's spelled out B-U swastika H. Oh, my God. But he is he's not down there to bring democracy to all the nice brown people there. Isn't Brazil where he went that time and he taught? Was it Lula he talked with, or Lula's predecessor where George said, "You have black people here?" Oh, my God. You can sum up the real reason for his trip in three words: location, location, location. He's scouting territory for Prairie Chapel South in some country that doesn't extradite to the United States. You can bet on that. You know, Bush crime family, they know a thing or two about the Nazis. They know about Paraguay. They know about the countries that became nesting holes for former Nazis, supported by the CIA, of course. So in honor of his visit, we have Guacamoron sounds on the program tonight, a little bit later on. The story about Newt Gingrich that we told you about last night that is reverberated a little bit, not a whole lot, around television today about Newt being the whorish pig that he is and going on with James Dobson yesterday to forgive me, Father, for I've sinned. Okay, when was your last confession? You know, it's... Imagining Newt Gingrich doing a young woman like Callista, whatever her name was, who was actually an employee or an intern, using his superior position, no pun intended, to force this woman into sex, or not force her, you know, whatever. Well, at the same time, coming across with all his garbage mouth about... you know, more taking the Republicans standing on the moral high ground and all this other crap. Way back in on August 17th, 1999, Robert Scheer, writing in the LA Times before he was fired, wrote a column entitled Gingrich, Call of Duty, as I say, not as I do. Here's just a couple of paragraphs. He says, Gingrich has been a seminal figure in the trivialization of politics as a morality play, in which an ever-virtuous family values right wing inevitably triumphs over what, in a 1995 speech, he termed the moral decay of the left. But as the adulterous affairs of several conservative Republicans and Gingrich's own behavior suggest, infidelity and other moral wanderings do not lend themselves so neatly to partisan distinctions. Why is this big news? Because Newt Gingrich was decisive in shaping one of the nastiest, most tumultuous, and divisive periods in American history in the name of moral purity. In his dogged pursuit of a bloody culture war, he delighted in deriding as abnormal those who would not pledge allegiance to the pieties of his allies in the Christian coalition, while he and his ilk claimed the moral high ground of traditional core values. And it goes on. You can find this if you want. But Gingrich, you know, he's not from Georgia, but he was a Georgia legislator, and then he got elected to the Congress from here in Georgia. He is so scummy, like so many Republicans. I defy you to tell me a leading Republican figure who is not covered in slime, moral turpitude, hypocrisy. Go ahead, name one. We have another one down here, Phil Gingrey, who is just, I don't know what this guy's problem is. He's a Republican, member of the U.S. House, just an utter slime ball. Yesterday at the House Armed Services Committee hearing on Veterans Care, this was at thinkprogress.org, Gingrey attempted to stand out from the rest of Congress and argue that the conditions in Building 18 weren't that bad. Instead of criticizing the cockroach infestation, he said, quote, I was glad to know that those cockroaches were belly up. It suggested to me that at least someone was spraying for them, end quote. And he also tried to blame the soldiers for the conditions, stating, quote, and of course, if you leave food around in a motel room or a dorm room at a college, you're going to get some mice that show up at some point in time, end quote. What a bastard. What a filthy, filthy bastard. These people from Georgia, Zell Miller, I've got some Zell Miller news for you. Our toy governor down here, big old Sonny Liston. No, I'm sorry, Sonny Perdue, has nothing to do with the chicken family, although who knows. Gingrey further, in his testimony, blamed the media, specifically the Post. Don't you love this? For the fallout, saying he was shocked that Army Secretary Harvey and Walter Reed Commander General Whiteman were fired. Gingrey said, quote, ask the Washington Post whose head should roll. I think President Bush probably would be the only satisfaction. Let's try to take some of the politics aside and some of the rhetoric and try to solve the problem, end quote. Yeah, well, Gingrey, the way you solve the problem is go in there with a paddle board, you know, the bottom foot and a half of a canoe paddle, drill some holes in it like they did up at camp, and then just smack the living hell on the bare asses of these triple amputees for leaving food laying around. Right? Isn't that what Gingrey would like to do? Oh, my God, they left food laying around. Well, that's why there's rats in there. Son of a bitch. Like I say, every day I think it can't get any worse. And then it gets worse.
Is that the same guy who held up the plate of food at the press conference and talked about the Gitmo prisoners? And look, they get the double fruit, and they get the two cookies,
the chicken
dinner. They get fruit three times a week. They get fruit at Gitmo. So what if we're beating them with sticks?
And Zell Miller today? Zell Miller? Oh, my God. It wasn't today. It was earlier this week. But Miller recently told an anti-abortion gathering down here in Macon, Georgia, that the killing, quote, of unborn babies was the cause of many of America's woes right now, including its military, social security, and immigration problems. Huh? Miller claimed that 43 million babies have been, quote, killed, end quote, since the Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade in 1973. He said, How could this great land of plenty produce too few people in the last 30 years? Here's the brutal truth that no one dares to mention. We're too few because too many of our babies have been killed. If those 45 million children had lived, today they would be defending our country. They would be filling our jobs. They would be paying into Social Security. Oh, Christ. Now, in 2004, Zell Miller said about the re-election of Bush, "There's but one man to whom I'm willing to entrust my grandchildren's future, and that man's name is George W. Bush." Jesus, please help us. I'll even agree that you exist if you'll just help us.
No one will heed you. Your mind is totally controlled. It has been stuffed into my mold. And you will do as you are told until the rights to you are.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much about
corazones de las personas aquí en America son grandes.
Don't know what a sky blue is for. But I do know one and one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be.
Oh, my God. Oh, by the way, I just got an email from Daryl in Montgomery, Alabama. There is a site called democracyinteractive.com where we Daryl writes, where we have something called the Mike Malloy Listening Party each weeknight where you're on the air. We listen and have virtual beer. Please let our fellow Malloyites know that they're welcome to join us nightly on the site. It's democracyinteractive.com. And yeah, we did an online chat there one time, didn't we, Kathy? Yeah, we did. democracyinteractive.com. Check them out.
That's cerveza to Jorge W.
Richard in Hoboken, New Jersey sent this email to me. Is today the 9th? Okay, he sent it today. Richard writes, after 6 years of Bush-Cheney, one has to wonder why it's only now that the mainstream media or commercial media view the vice president as, quote, under a cloud, end quote. That's, yeah, ever since the Libby verdict, it puts Cheney under a cloud. Richard writes, it forces us to assume that he, who many believe to have played a major role in massive voter fraud, the invasion of Iraq, Katrina, global warming, unprecedented debt, torturous policy, domestic spying, huge increases in the U.S. poverty rate, worldwide condemnation of our policies, radical jurists, the end of habeas corpus, and at least one attempt to gut Social Security, and on and on and on, was considered by you folks to be, at the very least, quote, a ray of sunshine? Just prior to the Libby verdict? Yeah. I know. And who was it? Oh, yeah, it was Gergen that we quoted last night. It said that the Libby verdict now puts the Bush administration, this is their first scandal or something. I don't care. Mayan priests will purify a sacred archaeological site to eliminate bad spirits after Bush visits next week. That's an official with close ties to the group said today, yesterday. Juan Tine, the director of a Mayan non-governmental organization with close ties to Mayan religious and political leaders, said yesterday, quote, a person like Bush, with the persecution of our migrant brothers in the United States, with the wars he has provoked, is going to walk in our sacred lands, is an offense for the Mayan people and their culture. Mr. Tinney, Juan Tinney, said the spirit guides of the Mayan community decided it would be necessary to cleanse the sacred site of bad spirits so their ancestors could rest in peace after Bush's visit. This is from the city of Xinchi, 30 miles west of the capital city of Guatemala City. It was founded as the capital of the Cachiqueles Kingdom before the Spanish conquest in 1524. Well, there you go. That's your geography and your American history for this evening. Where else was it that he was? Remember, Kathy, where they came out and shook the rattles and invoked the spirits to get rid of his... Was that in India? Someplace. Well, it's all nonsense. Bush's nonsense. What else we got here? Oh, yeah, a videotape showing a Pentagon official's final interrogation of Jose Padilla is missing. Yeah, it's missing. There were 88 video recordings of Padilla being interrogated during the 3.5 years he was held in solitary confinement in the United States and tortured. 88 videotapes, 87 are available. The last one is missing. The tape is classified, but Padilla's attorneys say they believe something happened during that interrogation that could explain why Padilla does not trust them and suspects that they, the attorneys, trying to defend him, are government agents. Pentagon attorney James Schmidley said during a recent court hearing, quote, "I don't know what happened to it," end quote. U.S. District Judge overseeing all this, Marcia Cook, was incredulous that anything connected to such a high-profile defendant could be lost. She said to prosecutors, quote, "Do you understand how it might be difficult for me to understand that a tape related to this particular individual just got mislaid?" End quote. Unbelievable. When something vile and foul is available as evidence about the Bush crime family, it disappears, or everyone forgets, or like that.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Boom, boom, boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk.
Be careful, they may spend a lot of time at the bars around here, but
when you walk that walk and you talk that talk.
What?
Be careful, they may spend a lot of time at the bars around here, but
boom, boom, boom.
I think he was talking about his daughters.
I think so. Okay, we want to do some of the sound for you here. Before Bush took off on his wonderful adventure into South America, he addressed members of the international... the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. That's who he was talking to. It was at the International Trade Center in Washington, D.C., and Bush was discussing Western Hemisphere policy, which even today can translate into one word, imperialism. If you want to modify it, U.S. imperialism. Come on. Come on. Is there anybody in the Western Hemisphere who understands the policy of the United States that isn't aware that it has been brutal, bloody, unrelenting oppression for several hundred years? Who doesn't know that? For Christ's sake, who doesn't know that? Huh? Western Hemisphere policy. Kill them all! I mean, country after country. Okay, let's play our little game again. Somebody out there, name for me one country south of the border of the United States and Mexico. One country south of that border. One that has not been exploited, brutalized by the United States, where we haven't overthrown their governments, we haven't murdered their people, we haven't set up death squads, we haven't condemned literally millions of people to poverty in order for the profits of companies like United Fruit or ITT, huh? Come on, folks! Name me one country! Right. So before Jorge went south for a little siesta and a plan to further economically rape the sugarcane workers with his ethanol tariffs, he spoke to the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce on Monday about neighborhoods in poverty. It's always fun to listen to La Chimpa get his sombrero on. He always sounds drunk when he fakes that accent that he's supposed to be someone who is primarily a Spanish speaker trying to speak English. He is so funny.
Siéntese, buenas tardes.
Gracias por la bienvenida. For those of you not from Texas, that means good afternoon. Thank you for the welcome. I'm honored to be back again with the men and women of the Hispanic Chamber. I appreciate so very much the work you do with our banks to help move capital. I appreciate so very much the fact that you recognize outstanding Latina businesswomen through your Ana Maria Arias Fund. I appreciate the fact that you say loud and clear, El sueño americano es para todos. Thursday, Laura and I are going to leave on a trip that will take us to Brazil and Uruguay and Colombia and Guatemala y por fin Mexico. These are countries that are part of a region that has made great strides toward freedom and prosperity.
Oh, yeah.
Yet despite the advances, tens of millions in our hemisphere remain stuck in poverty.
No!
And shut off from the promises of the new century. My message to those trabajadores y campesinos is you have a friend in the United States of America. We care about your plight.
We care about your plight, Jesus Christ. Despite the advances, tens of millions in our hemisphere remain stuck in poverty and shut off from the promises of a new century. Right? That was true. That was true in the 16th century, 17th century, 18th, 19th, 20th, and now the 21st. You're right, George! Only you used the singular. It should be plural. Promises of the new centuries. On and on and on. Now that Alberto Gonzalez, how come he never talks about Alberto that way? You know, sometimes people accuse me of being anti-Latino. And when they say that, all I do is point to my attorney general. And when they accuse me of being like, anti-black and stuff, man, you know, I just point to who's left, Condoleezza Rice. Now that Gonzalez is busy in the Justice Department removing portions of the Constitution that are just too darn Democratic, Bush has a new Tejano. And I think the new Tejano has a new haircut, I guess. Now that's news.
I want to thank my friend Tejano, Massey Villarreal, who's with us today. Massey, it's good to see you again. He's got him barba crecida. I want to thank Carlos Gutierrez, who's living there. Los embajadores están aquí, the ambassadors. Thank you all for being here. I see some of the ambassadors for the countries to which I'll be going. I'm sure all of them are here, and I appreciate you coming. Thanks for your time. This is an important speech for me today.
Uh-oh.
It's a speech that sets out a direction.
Direction.
For this country in regards to our neighborhood.
Our neighborhood.
That from New York, and Rio de Janeiro, to Buenos Aires and Montreal, we speak different languages. But our democracies all derive their legitimacy from the same source, the consent of the governed.
Tell that to the Chileans. Oh, my God. Where do we start knocking down this ridiculous, asinine, right-wing rhetoric? We speak different languages. Yeah, and you sound like a moron in all of them. But our democracies all derive their legitimacy from the same source, the consent of the governed. Oh, God. I mean, where do you begin with that?
This from La Bandita de la Elecciones.
Good, yeah, that's good, Kelly. You just wonder why we can't all have this nifty government health care. Like the kind Cinco de Moron is getting for South America or something. I thought government health care was bad. I guess it's just bad for us Norte Americanos.
Today I'm going to announce a new initiative called the Healthcare Professional Training Center in Panama.
Panama.
That will serve all of Central America. Since I took office, we spent nearly $1 billion on healthcare programs in the region, all aimed at sending a message to the people of Latin America, we care for you. Los corazones de las personas aquí en America son grandes.
Somebody go out and get me a large burrito with lots of sauce. Okay, El Schmucko, how about some help for the people in the Gulf Coast? You know, Los Estados Unidos? Los Dictamos de Catrinos? Remember that partos of the worldos? You jackassos? Oh, my God. They have no access to medical care. In Central America, in Panama, since I took office, we spent nearly $1 billion on healthcare programs in the region, all aimed at sending a message to the people of Latin America. We can't screw over you yet like we do Americans, but we're coming! So El Dorco then sneaks a shot of Chinaco and presses on, describing how rural farmers are scratching. And they need to sell vegetables to the universe or something like that. Somebody should tell Jorge not to swallow the worm next time.
These are hardworking folks. And I used to remind people in Texas, family values didn't stop at the Rio Grande River.
Really?
It's in our interest that businesses flourish in our own neighborhood. Flourishing businesses provide jobs for people at home.
Oh.
They provide customers for U.S. products. If you're a rural farmer scratching out a subsistence living, wouldn't you want to be able to sell your goods to new markets overseas?
Oh, no.
I think so.
Okay.
If you're trying to make a living and the market's closed, it seems to make sense that you should want to be able to sell into a larger universe.
Yep.
If you're a worker looking for a job, wouldn't you want more employers competing for your labor?
That's why they're all in China.
The more employers there are in your neighborhood, the more likely it is you're going to find a better job.
God damn, I never thought of that.
It's not really sophisticated math or economics. It just happens to be the truth. La verdad.
La verdad. Sounds like you've had one too many mojitas, mi amigo. Ah? Cuanto si quiero que mucho. What is this nonsense? If you're a rural farmer, as opposed to what? A farmer in downtown Manhattan? You're trying to make a living and the market is closed. Well, here's what you do. Take an old Coke bottle, fill it full of gasoline, make a wick of, I don't know, some of your clothing, stuff it in there, light it, and throw it at the market. That'll open it up. It seems to make sense that you should want to be able to sell into a larger universe. What is this if you're a worker looking for a job? Wouldn't you want more employers competing for your labor? Yeah, but it doesn't work that way, bastard. The average income in Mexico has gone down since NAFTA. Down! As the average income for workers in Norte Americana has gone down! Oh, what the hell. No, you know. Give me another Chinaco. How about a bag of tortillas? Hey, we'll be back in a moment. Un momento, por favor.
Vendido su alma. Gana dinero. Jorge Bush gana dinero. Gana dinero. Tequila!
Tequila! Oh. It's about 10 before the hour. Jorge is down further polluting U.S. relations with our dusky brethren south of the Rio Grande. He's all over South America. I guess he's going to stop in Central America, too, and maybe go to some of those cemeteries that in Guatemala or maybe El Salvador or maybe Honduras or maybe Nicaragua, where his current second-in-command at the U.S. State Department, John Negroponte, was so instrumental in filling up the real estate. Huh, you think? Nah, of course not. But on Monday, he was at the Ronald Reagan Building addressing the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce about Western Hemisphere policy. And it's just astonishing. I just wonder why, oh, God, you know, why wonder this stuff? But why ambassadors for these countries don't stand up and say, you know, you son of a bitch, all you are is another white man in a long line of imperialists who have come to our country and poisoned, raped, looted, stole, bastardized, corrupted, and murdered. And you want to talk to us about economic policy? Oh, okay, sure. Now, I love his little personal anecdotes about the little brown locals he's met during his travels. These are such homey, personal stories that really hit you in the heart, especially when La Coca Loco falls asleep in the middle of them.
Here's an interesting story for you. Mariano Canu. He was an indigenous farmer in Guatemala whose land provided barely enough corn and beans to feed his family. He was scratching. Mariano began tilling the fields at age 7.
Hello? Hello?
Trade helped him a lot.
A lot.
And here's how. To take advantage of new market opportunities.
Yeah.
He organized an association of small farmers called Labradores Mayas.
Oh.
These farmers began growing vegetables that they could sell overseas. Oh. High-valued crops like lettuce and carrots and celery.
And coca.
They took out a loan. Capital matters. It's important to have capital available. And they built an irrigation system with that loan.
Wow.
And soon they were selling their crops to large companies like Walmart Central America.
What?
Today, Labradores is a thriving business that supports more than 1,000 jobs and the marketing of internationally sold vegetables.
What? Huh? Where am I again? Belgium? Berlin? Now get this. Now get this. He was an indigenous farmer in Guatemala. Okay, if that was in the 80s, that's just for the sake of argument, let's say it was in the 80s. And he organized an association of small farmers called Labradores Mayas. Do you know what would have happened to this man? Do you know what would have happened to this man during the 80s, Truth Seekers, had he had the absolute communist temerity to organize an association of farmers called Labradores Mayas? ¿Por qué? What does that mean, Labradores Mayas? It sounds to me very much like comunista. It sounds like Fidel Castro. Do you know what we were doing to Guatemalans in the 80s, who organized an association for anything, including the Church of Rome? We were murdering them. We were killing them on the roads and in the jungles. We were stopping jeeps full of nuns and raping them and then killing them. Oh, it wasn't us? Oh, okay, my bad. Who was it? Oh, it's people we hired and trained. That's right. School of the Americas style stuff. Right down the road here in Fort Benning, Georgia. So this guy organized an association of small farmers called Labradores Mayas shortly after he was beheaded. Jesus God. This man knows nothing. So here he is. Is it just me, or does he really sound toasted here? And he's just totally obsessed with George Washington. Have you noticed? As if the fact that they have the same first name. My name, Jorge Bush, his name, Jorge Washington, somehow matters. But I do think they both had an active interest in hemp. One grew it, and this jackass smokes it.
You know, not far from the White House is a statue of the great liberator Simon Bolivar.
Oh.
He's often compared to George Washington, Jorge W. Like Washington, he was a general who fought for the right of his people to govern themselves.
W.
Like Washington, he succeeded in defeating a much stronger colonial power, and like Washington, he belongs to all of us who love liberty. By extending the blessings of liberty to the least among us, we will fulfill the destiny of this new world and set a shining example for others.
Other worlds.
Que Dios le bendiga.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Jorge W. Oh, please kill me now. Simon Bolivar, like Washington, he says, succeeded in defeating a much stronger colonial power. How can George Bush talk about the defeat of a colonial power to Spanish speakers from this hemisphere and keep a straight face? How can he do that? Oh, my God. All right. When we come back, we now will move to Sao Paulo, Brazil, where they do not speak Spanish. No, they speak that other one, that crazy one, that Portuguese that Bush cannot speak. So they need a translator. We will have that. And we got one more. We got two more, right? Okay, stick around. The night is young. Pour yourself another shot of Chinaco. Just don't eat the worm. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Do we have just this one left? We have two left? Okay. We want you to hear Bush participating in a joint press availability with El Presidente de Brasil in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Now, if you're a white Texan speaking Spanish, referring to Brazilians who speak Portuguese, you might sound like that. But just a little leap of faith here. Jump ahead from Monday. All that sound I just played for you. Jump ahead from there to today. Okay, now Bush is in Brazil trying to explain how biodiesel fuel from sugarcane is going to revolutionize the Brazilian economy. Now, I thought they were, is it Brazil that's already doing this? But never mind. It's going to revolutionize the Brazilian economy. You know, get more people out there cutting the cane. That and the huge tariff that we put on ethanol imports from Brazil. That's Duvalier's concept of fair trade. Now, here, he answers some reporters' questions. Mr. President Bush, Hugo Chavez of Venezuela has been using his country's vast oil wealth to court a whole new generation of Latin Americans. You pretty much avoided using his name. He certainly used yours a lot, including saying earlier today, go home, gringo. Do you think a visit to Latin America and agreements like the one you forged today will help counter his influence or just give him more, ammunition?
As to my trip, I bring the goodwill of the United States to South America and Central America. That's why I'm here. I don't think America gets enough credit for trying to help improve people's lives.
Because we end so many of them.
And so my trip is to explain as clearly as I can that our nation is generous and compassionate. That when we see poverty, we care.
Mississippi!
There is a lot of investment in the region, as the president noted.
Louisiana!
Oh, for some, that's just a fancy word. But for others who benefit from the investment through jobs, it's an essential part of their life.
Oh.
And so my trip down here is to reminding people that which is pretty evident, that a lot of people know that there are direct ties between our countries.
Death squads.
So this trip is to remind people of the ties that bind us and the importance of this region for the future of the United States. And I'm real glad to be here, and I appreciate the hospitality. Get another question moving.
Yeah, get your ass in gear there. Thanks for hospitality, and I'm getting parts, so hurry this up, okay? It's cerveza time, huh? When we see poverty, we care. We can hear it in your voice. Dork. Remember Mississippi and Louisiana, you empty promising bastard? Huh? You remember about that? What is this? Well, he says there's a lot of investment in the region. Oh, for some, that's just a fancy word. Investment is a fancy word? Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is a fancy word. Investment is just, kind of like streetcar or shoe leather. Yeah, that's all one word, Joe. George. So this trip, he says, is to remind people of the ties that bind us. One word, Negroponte. You want me to send him back down here? Schmucks? How you say in Portuguese, schmuck? You want me to send Negroponte back here? This trip is to remind people of the ties that bind us. All those strictures of unfair trade and capitalist exploitation. You belong to us, my little brown non-Spanish-speaking friends. It sounds like this trip is to get loaded and scout locations for a new bush ranch in a country that won't extradite his drunk ass when he's finally indicted for war crimes, doesn't it? And he says he's very concerned about the importance of this region for the future of the United States. Oops! Little slip there, Jorge. Don't you mean for the future of the people of Brazil? No? The future of the United States? Los Estados Unidos? Oh, my God, this man just drives me insane. Last one. Last one from La Chimpa. Before he heads off to the bars here. Where's my daughters? We're going to go out and tie one on tonight, by God. Listen up if you think I'm kidding here. This reporter hits just a little bit too close to home. Here's what he says. My question is for President Bush, and it's whether you agree that in recent years, the U.S. really had its back turned to Latin America. And if so, what could be done to make up for the losses in the past in the last 2 years here of your presidency?
I strongly disagree with your description of U.S. foreign policy. That may be, what people say, but it's certainly not what the facts bear out.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I just told you that our bilateral aid package has doubled.
Oh, dumbass.
Again, I fully recognize that money alone is not a sign of compassion or care.
Uh-huh.
But it's money aimed at helping people improve their lives. It's social justice money.
Social justice money.
I'm going to, when I go to Guatemala, I'm going to go to I'm going to go outside the capital and see our military building health clinics. And so the characterization that our back has been turned is not borne out by the facts. It may be a perception.
Yeah.
But think about this. The United States is a multicultural society.
Don't tell Lou Dobbs!
We've got people from all over South and Central America living in the United States. Many there legally, many there illegally.
Smack.
Which, by the way, argues for a comprehensive immigration reform plan that teaches people with respect and dignity. It's one of the big issues that I have put forth to our Congress. Mr. President, thanks. Your press conferences are nice. I appreciate the Brazilian press for coming. It's glad the American press behaved okay. Be careful. They may spend a lot of time at the bars around here, but... okay, thanks.
What a dumb bastard. He disagrees with the description of U.S. foreign policy. The reporter was trying to be, diplomatic? My question is for President Bush is whether you agree that in recent years the U.S. really had its back turned to Latin America. Oh, I strongly disagree. We didn't have our back turned. We were facing you. We had ropes in our hands and guns and knives and death squad manuals. What do you mean our backs turned to you? Jesus Christ, we killed 200,000 of you in Central America, most in El Salvador, Guatemala. And we made sure that thousands of you disappeared down here in Chile. Don't even get me started on Argentina and Brazil. Brazil. We are destroying an entire culture. We are destroying the lungs of the world in order to grow chicken McNuggets for McDonald's and hamburgers for Burger King. What do you mean we've had our back turned to you, boy? Or, I'm sorry, sir? We have been compassionate to you little funny-speaking people. We really have. You know, the United States is a multicultural society. We've got people from all over South and Central America, many of them legally, many there illegally. Which argues for a comprehensive immigration plan that teaches people, I think he meant to say treats people with respect and dignity. No, 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 Mr. President. Check with your vice president. Check with Kellogg, Brown, and Root. Check with Halliburton. We have built 200 detention centers for the immigrants. Or maybe not for the immigrants. Poor Guacamoron, he was so eager to get out of this briefing because the Brazilian president promised they'd light up some Cubans after it was all over. Imagine Jorge's disappointment when President Lula handed him a cigar.
Uncertainty in some. I understand that.
Two past the hour. We're getting a lot of emails on this this particular topic of Bush in South America and then Central America. Andre, isn't it amazing how the ultra-capitalists are now selling exploitation? I keep thinking of Gregory Peck as Mengele in The Boys from Brazil, gently stroking a child's face and saying to a guard, "Kill him." From Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, regarding Bush in Guatemala. In fact, subsidized U.S. staple crops introduced into Guatemala and Honduras by lower tariffs forced most small landowners to sell off their land because they couldn't compete on price, which then forced them into the sweatshops making clothing for 80 cents or so an hour. Yeah. This guy, I can't believe that the governors or the presidents or the ministers of these countries allow this son of a bitch into the country, much less to stand there and display an ignorance that is just incomprehensible. What an insult to say to the people of these countries that the United States is interested in doing anything to them but exploiting the Christ out of them. How insulting is that? We assassinated Salvador Allende, who was elected with the plurality of the vote in, what, 70, 71, 72, in Chile? Who set that up? Huh? Henry Kissinger, that ghoulish son of a bitch who's still slobbering his way from TV studio to TV studio, and he dare not go out of the United States. Somebody will arrest his ass and hold him for a trial for crimes against humanity. It just goes on and on. Uruguay? Paraguay? Don't even get me started on Colombia and what's the other country up there, Kat? Of course, Venezuela. Ecuador. Texaco went into Ecuador and left that country in a state of toxic pollution that is astonishing. And the government of Ecuador tried to sue Texaco in a U.S. district court. And somehow it was thrown out. Or they agreed to pay 1/1,000,000% of what the people of Ecuador wanted. Colombia, what have we done to Colombia because of this goddamn coca drug trade? We have attempted to Agent Orange that country to make it look like Vietnam 40 years ago. It just doesn't stop. Venezuela, we've tried how many times to assassinate Chavez? How many times? 2, 3, 10? How does this man stand? Not him. Bush is an ignoramus. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He has no sense of history. Certainly not U.S. history, where it concerns Central and South America. But the governors, the presidents of these countries, who must stand there. I watched a little bit of Bush and Lula in Brazil, and you could tell by the body language of Brazil's leader that he found George Bush to be nothing but a contemptible rat bastard that he, Lula, had to put up with simply because Bush decided to come. God. Brazil is being just totally defoliated. Colombia is also. Ecuador is an ecological disaster area. Venezuela, which imports, is our second or third or fourth, I guess third or fourth largest importer of oil. We keep trying to murder Chavez so we can steal his assets. They don't like us. Don't even talk about Cuba. Nicaragua, former Sandinista leader Ortega has had some sort of a nerve out and now thinks he's a Republican. Oh, that's right. He's had his brain completely turned into jello by these filthy evangelicals who went into Central America to poison these people with this evangelical Christianity horse droppings. El Salvador, has that country ever recovered? What about the slaughters? It just goes on and on. And Bush stands there and talks to these people as if we have something positive to offer.
Those who enter the country illegally violate the law.
Cut my heel, had to cruise on back home. But there's booze in the blender, and soon it will render that frozen concoction that helps me hang on.
It's about 25 before the hour. Boy, I'm just worn out. We either need a polka or we need Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Let's go with Uncle Mike's Story Corner because the night's horrors are not past yet. In fact, the past is not even past. Or what? Never mind. It's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Well, good evening, kiddies. Gather around for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Everybody comfy? Got your jammies on? How about you kids down there in South Mississippi? Huh? How does it feel to live in one of those roach-infested black mold trailers? Well, Uncle George will soon take care of it for you. He's going to teach you how to grow sugar cane. Yeah. Tonight's story is written by Doug Thompson of Capitol Hill Blue. Okay, hold on to your teddy bears. Maybe, just maybe, it's time to pull the plug on this failed democratic republic called the United States of America. Turn off the life support. Disconnect the IVs. Bring in the priest for last rites. The U.S. of A. is brain dead with no chance for revival. Some 40 years ago, I lost friends in the heat and squalor of Vietnam. They died in a war that never needed to be fought, supporting a cause that didn't exist for a government that lied to justify the fight. And a few years later, as a young reporter, I wrote about the attempts of Richard Milhouse Nixon to destroy the Constitution of the United States. He failed because the system worked and both Congress and the Supreme Court exercised their powers in our system of checks and balances to restore order to a faltering nation. I wrote at that time, quote, "The lessons of Vietnam and Watergate provide a roadmap for the future. With luck, our leaders can use that roadmap to avoid the mistakes of the past," end quote. Now, 33 and a half years after the Vietnam War came to an end without resolution, and Nixon left office without honor, I'm losing family and friends in the heat and squalor of Iraq. They die in a war that never needed to be fought, supporting a cause that doesn't exist for a government that lied to justify their sacrifices. Another despot occupies the presidency, an evil man whose lust for power surpasses Nixon and who poses a far greater danger to the Constitution. This time, however, the system is failing to protect America from despots. George W. Bush rides roughshod over a compliant Congress. The Supreme Court, packed with knee-jerk right-wingers who helped put Bush in office in 2000, abdicated its role long ago. For a moment, a brief one to be sure, we held out hope that the voice of the voters might be heard after the November midterm elections. But turning out the corrupt Republican leadership of Congress was not enough. Democrats who control the House lack the courage to take Bush on. And the razor-thin majority in the Senate can't even get a vote together on a non-binding resolution. Democrats yesterday unveiled a plan to bring troops home by the end of 2008, but Bush is already threatening to a veto if the bill gets out of Congress, which it probably won't. In the meantime, we've learned that Bush lied about both the size and the cost of his troop surge that he claims will bring peace and stability to Iraq. Not only are we sending more troops in than he said at a cost far higher than he projected, his own general on the ground says they will have to stay longer than he told the American people earlier this year. Over at the Department of Justice, the FBI has lied repeatedly about its use and abuse of the rights-robbing USA Patriot Act to obtain information on U.S. citizens. I find it disturbing that in all the rhetoric about its restoring America to the people, the new Democratic leadership of Congress doesn't say a damn thing about repealing the USA Patriot Act, an ill-conceived bill crafted by former Attorney General John Ashcroft and hastily voted into law after 9/11 by shell-shocked representatives and senators who later admitted they hadn't even read it. Today we learn that the federal government, at the direction of the White House, routinely ignores the Freedom of Information Act and hides more and more government documents under a cloak of secrecy. Both Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid joined with Republicans to vote not only for original passage of the USA Patriot Act, but also to reauthorize it. Bush has used the act to justify spying on Americans, wiretapping without warrants, and stripping away the last protections of the Constitution. While Congress slept and the Supreme Court looked the other way, the Bush administration has gone on its merry way, seizing absolute control of the United States government. He fired independent-thinking U.S. attorneys, replacing them with lockstep right-wingers who share his view of totalitarian control of government. He ignores the laws of Congress, issuing signing statements that give him the power to do whatever he wants. When the federal courts declared his wiretapping of Americans illegal, he ignored the ruling and appointed an in-house review panel that declared the program legal. Doesn't matter who controls Congress. Congress is a dead institution, ruled by timid legislators who no longer exercise any real role in the governing of this nation. Doesn't matter what the Supreme Court may or may not do. The President of the United States has declared himself a wartime president and granted himself dictatorial rights that no one in Congress or the court appears able to successfully challenge him. The America we used to cherish is dead, replaced by a ruthless dictator. The America that more than 3,100 men and women died for in Iraq no longer exists. We might as well pull the sheet over Uncle Sam's head and prepare for the funeral. Or can we as a people regain control of our government? Perhaps. But doing so will require drastic measures. I'm not talking about kicking out one party of political hacks and replacing it with another. Been there. Done that. Witnessed the failure. We need to rethink this experiment called America. Maybe we need to start with a clean sheet of paper. Maybe it's time to recognize that our present America is a rotting corpse, devoured from within by the cancer of politics, corruption, greed, and a lust for power. Maybe it's time for a new American revolution. After all, the last one started because another guy named George tried to destroy our way of life. Uncle Mike's Story Corner for tonight, Truth Seekers, from Capitol Hill Blue, Doug Thompson, writing today. Part of what he's talking about there is the revelation today, excuse me, that the FBI has improperly used provisions of the USA Patriot Act to obtain thousands of telephone, business, and financial records with no judicial approval. Now, this is the FBI. This is something entirely different. This is not the NSA. This is not the stuff through the FISA court. This is USA Patriot Act. Huh? This is a whole different attack on individual freedom and liberty and justice in this country. Do you understand that? I want to make sure you understand that. This is not what we were all screaming and mouth-breathing about a couple of months ago. This is using provisions of the USA Patriot Act. The FBI has said, screw the law. Let's see what we got here. The report found that the FBI had no controls to make sure that its agents were acting properly. Agents, an individual agent now, can strip your ass naked. An individual FBI agent, thanks to the USA Patriot Act, by declaring that you may be tangential to an ongoing operation, can look at everything about you, can look inside every body orifice you have, your children's, your spouse's, can look at your bank records, your medical records. None of it is private anymore. The report found that the FBI lacked sufficient controls to make sure that its agents were acting properly. Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI, called a news conference today, and he accepted responsibility for the lapses. Oh, and to pledge his best efforts to see they're not repeated. Oh, Mueller asked rhetorically, did you see this? How could this happen?
Who is to be held accountable? And the answer to that is, I am to be held accountable. Then you rotten son of a bitch, resign! Get out of office, you Nazi bastard!
No, he's not going to resign. Under the USA Patriot Act, the FBI has issued more than 20,000 demands for information known as national security letters. You know what that is? They used to be called warrants. It used to need approval of a judge or a court or somebody, a magistrate. Now they're called national security letters, and if I were an FBI agent, I could get one on you!
The report concluded that the program lacks effective management, monitoring, and reporting procedures. Oh, damn. Mr. Mueller said in response to a reporter's question, no, I have no intention resigning. I'm just going to be held accountable.
Frightened about getting on the computer.
How could this happen, Robert Mueller said. Who is to be held accountable? And the answer to that is, I am to be held accountable. Next question.
Looks like Mueller went to the Rumsfeld School of Rhetorical Question Answering.
Yeah, I think so. Details of this report emerged yesterday, a day ahead of its formal publication, as Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and other officials struggled to tamp down a congressional uproar over another issue, the ouster of 8 United States attorneys. You wonder why Doug Thompson, Capitol Hill Blue, writes something that sounds just so morbidly depressing, right? And then you read this in the New York Times. The use of national security letters since the September 2001 attacks has been a hotly debated domestic intelligence issue. They were once used only in espionage and terrorism cases, and then only against people suspected as agents of a foreign power. With the passage of the Patriot Act, their use was greatly expanded and is being used against Americans who are subjects of any investigation. The law also allows other agencies, plural, like the Homeland Security Department, to issue the letters. The letters have proved contentious in part because, unlike search warrants, they are issued without prior judicial approval and require only the approval of the agent in charge of a local FBI office. Put a fork in us, truth seeker. We're done. It is not too weird to wonder, as Kathy doesn't wonder about this. I don't know why she doesn't. But every once in a while, usually about 9 o'clock in the morning when I'm drinking a cup of coffee, and Kathy and Molly have been up for an hour and a half, and I come down to the kitchen, And Molly says, Daddy! And Kathy says, hey, honey. And I look at both of them and I say, aren't you scared? And Kathy will sometimes say something like, well, not really, but I do have to get to Target. were out of bathroom tissue. Now that's scary. I don't know how some people do that, and God knows, Kathy, you've been exposed to this crap as long as you have known me, 11 years, a little over 11 years now. That's how we met. Kathy used to listen to the program. She wanted to be my friend because she thought I was gay. That's so true. By the way, this came in during the last break. Ted Haggard is still heterosexual. But Kathy thought I was gay, and she wanted to be my friend, and she brought me some cookies on one of the many times the day I got fired. I didn't get fired. I ran out of money. I had to buy my show. I had to spend $150 an hour for a three-hour-a-day program. Anyway, I don't understand why Kathy doesn't get scared. She's younger than I am. She's going to be on this planet, if everything turns out actuarially as projected, much longer than I will. She will live to see Molly grow up and have grandchildren. Odds are I will not, if Molly chooses to have grandchildren. But, I don't know. If I were more her age right now, Kathy's age right now, I think I probably would be scared. But she's not. Is it a woman thing? Is it a female thing to have faith? I don't know. Doug Thompson obviously doesn't have it. I can feel it, the last shreds of it slipping away from me. How about you, Truth Seeker? Huh? I get lots of emails from people of a certain age, right around my age, a little bit younger, a little bit older, who kind of feel the same way I do. Like, oh my God, who'd have thunk it? My mother was shocked before she died a couple of years ago. She was shocked at what was going on. She was 89 at the time. Very lucid, very political. The only time she became non-lucid was about, when was it, Kathy? About 8 hours before she died. So, I don't know. Oh, and Bush has told U.S. scientists in the Fish and Wildlife Service, don't mention the polar bears. That's right. The Bush administration, once again, is gagging U.S. government scientists, you can read, understand that any way you want to, by getting them to agree not to talk about polar bears, sea ice, or climate change during official overseas trips. A leaked memorandum issued by a regional director of the U.S. Department of the Interior states that officials within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will, by God, limit their discussions when traveling in countries bordering the Arctic region because of sensitivities about climate change. The memo from the regional director, Richard Hannon, to his boss, the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service, says, quote, our travelers understand the administration's position on climate change, polar bears, and sea ice, and will not be speaking on or responding to these issues. Spokesman for the Natural Resources Defense Council in Washington said, quote, this memo has got to be put into the wider context of what Bush has done to stifle debate on global warming over the last 6 years. The Bush administration has a long history of restricting scientific discourse on global warming's impacts and solutions. This continued restriction hampers our experts' ability to do their job effectively and to aggressively deal with the global warming challenge. End quote. Oh, God. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to take phone calls. This is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. 7 past the hour. This is from Jimmy in Thailand. Hi, Mike. I listen over Sirius on the Internet here in Thailand. You're the only commentator who asks when some crook says I'll take responsibility, then why not resign? There's no more responsibility in this country. He's referring to the U.S. In Japan, they are immediately shamed. They resign on their own. Sometimes they commit suicide, but they do take some responsibility. Thanks for pointing this out. When people ask me where I'm from, I tell them Canada, saying the USA is embarrassing because they assume I voted for Bush. Oh, well. Best wishes to you, Jimmy, of Thailand. Yeah, I had that thought the other day, Jimmy, and it got away from me, that honor, if these people in the Bush crime family had any honor, after causing the death and the destruction of the underpinning, the underlying principles of this country, when they're found out, I agree. They should immediately take responsibility, resign, go home, and commit ritual suicide. They can use a harakiri knife if they want to. They can use a bullet, a rope. If they have little children, that's a shame. Their children will probably be better off if these evil bastards are gone. But that would be the honorable thing to do. Yes, Robert Mueller, take responsibility. Now go home and kill yourself. Do you realize what you've done, what you've been a party to? Negroponte, you of all people, you should kill yourself. Gonzalez, I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. Dick Cheney, oh, never mind. He's already dead, has been for years. A couple of emails from Suzanne in L.A., about being scared. Mike, maybe Kathy feels as I do. And that is simply, this too shall pass. Maybe that's why Kathy's not scared. After all, Suzanne writes, Rita Cosby's last day at MSNBC is March 31st. Got to start somewhere. Really?
Oh, no. Don't tell me that. She having some throat surgery? She finally cleared her throat.
Talks like this and found herself out of a job.
Yeah, I noticed that. Suzanne also writes, Mike, here it is Friday again, and lots of us got paid today. Yeah, lots of us didn't. In that spirit, I would like to issue two challenges to your listeners tonight. In the next hour, all right, in the final hour of the program here, let's bump up the draftgore.com poll by 300 signatures. Excuse me, in less than 2 weeks, 16,000 people have signed on. And also, let's increase the Nova M founders by 100. In the same amount of time. And then let's all get going on celebrating one grand weekend. I'm all for that. DraftGore.com, if you haven't been there, please go. NovaMRadio.com, if you haven't been there, please go and sign up as a founder. Like Suzanne points out, it's payday. Don't mention polar bears, Bush tells U.S. scientists. You see, Arctic sea ice and the polar bear population, those are especially sensitive issues at present because American scientists have pointed out that the polar bear, which I believe is the world's biggest land carnivore, is unlikely to survive if the Arctic sea ice disappears in summer, which it's predicted to do. Rather soon in real time. Molly has a bunch of stuffed animals. I bought most of them because, I don't know, because I have a little 2-year-old, 3-year-old, all the different ages Molly's been already. She's 2 and a half now. But and there's just something about stuffed animals and little kids, right? Boys and girls. I had a lot of stuffed animals I bought for Chris, too, my now 28-year-old son. But one of the stuffed animals I got from Molly was a polar bear. It's about as long as, I don't know, from your elbow to your fingertips. It's real cut, real soft, but it looks like a polar bear. And polar bears, as you know, true seekers, are for the most part, they're not. They don't have white fur. It's kind of a very, 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 very light beige. And Molly likes her polar bear. And I just wonder what it's going to be like. Will Molly, if she grows up, what a hell of a thing to say, when she becomes a parent, will she buy her little boy or her little girl a stuffed polar bear, a stuffed animal, you know, fuzzy little stuffed animal, and will she say, these creatures used to live here on earth. Man. President George Bush last night started a five-nation tour of Latin America in an effort to salvage Washington's reputation in the region. Violent clashes were taking place between police and protesters in the financial center of Sao Paulo. The president's first stop, rioters threw rocks at police who answered with rubber bullets and tear gas bombs. Bystanders fled the smoke-filled streets outside the art museum as running battles erupted. Several loud explosions shook the area. Massive security effort will mobilize about 4,000 police officers and soldiers as Mr. Bush's 60-vehicle cavalcade drives through the sprawling metropolis of Sao Paulo. Oh, my God. Mr. Bush is due to meet Uruguay's President Tabaré Vázquez. It just goes on. I'm just reading the BBC report here about... And by the way, if you have Sirius satellite radio, I'm sure you listen to BBC News, which I did today. I was out and about with Molly. She fell asleep, so I put on BBC... not BBC America, just BBC. And it's incredible. They have I was listening to a call-in show there about geopolitical issues, and they had somebody from... the Commonwealth Council, there still is such a thing. And by his accent, I assumed he was Australian. But he was in the studios of the BBC, I assume in London, and they were taking phone calls from Ghana, from Australia, from Canada, from Tasmania, from several other countries in Africa, in addition to a guy from Pakistan, asking questions about Musharraf. It was incredible to listen. During the newscasts on the BBC, you want to hear a difference. If you have a satellite system that carries CNN International, you can get about the same effect. These are not newscasts for domestic consumption by citizens of the United States of America. We are so far beyond really hearing the news as to render such a concept gibberingly idiotic. But if you listen to the BBC or you watch CNN International, CNNI, on your cable or satellite system, you will be stunned and amazed, shocked and awed at the difference in news coverage. In listening to the BBC today, taking phone calls from common folk, I would assume, folk like you and me, who were asking questions of the executive director or whatever he was, whatever position he holds in the Commonwealth organization, asking questions of force and pertinence regarding the UK's participation in these wars against Iraq and sanctions against Iran and failure to support the Palestinian people in the occupied territories and on and on and on. The questions themselves were insightful and perceptive and a clear indication that people understood what they were asking about. But what was astonishing to me was the straightforward answers. There was no BS. Now, granted, the Commonwealth Association or whatever it is not a government agency. If they had Blair or his home secretary or somebody on the hot seat, maybe the answers would have been different, although I think Blair usually answers questions fairly straight up. But this guy, this member of the Commonwealth Council or whatever, I'm getting it wrong, but... he answered the questions. It was just incredible to listen to that, and to think, my God, why is something like this not available for consumption here in the United States? You know, as Suzanne pointed out, though, Rita Cosby, she's leaving March 31st. Oh no, I can't.
Yeah, I've run out of things to say here, Mike. There are no more professional wrestlers to interview. No more words.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I've reminded the Prime Minister, the American people, Mr. Prime Minister, over the past months that it was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship.
Yeah, okay. And I just find this kind of, this is one of those chuckle nutsy stories that I love. When Bush lands in the Uruguayan capital, Montevideo, tonight, he's probably already landed, as part of his little Latin American adventure, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez will be on attack just across the river in Argentina. Chavez, you see, is scheduled to speak to tens of thousands of anti-Bush protesters in the Argentine capital of Buenos Aires, and he'll do it with the blessing of the president of that country, Néstor Kirchner. In fact, Kirchner's aides are helping to organize the rally. Kirchner won't attend the rally, but his hosting of Chavez signals a decisive step away from the United States and toward the Venezuelans' vision of you know, instead of free markets, fair markets, and instead of unbridled capitalism, mixed market socialism, that sort of thing. McClatchy newspaper says Kirchner previously had been known as a more pragmatic leftist politician, somewhere between Chavez and the Brazilian president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. See, you know, the guy he was with today is also a leftist. That's why if you watched any of that, when they were on the stage together doing the Q&A, I'm sure you got the same impression or realization as I did, that Lula da Silva was about as interested in hugging this rat bastard as he was interested in hugging a 5'11" cockroach. Let's do some phone calls, all right? Starting with AJ the Music Factory, calling from the Catskills. Oh, my God. You finally got a job, huh?
Hey, handsome, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, AJ.
Good evening to the entire Malloy family.
Yeah, well, thank you.
You're welcome. And I hope that after, you know, doing all these moron sounds, occasionally Kathy rinses out her brain.
She leaves the room or turns off her headphones and just kind of...
I'll tell you something. If Duplave says one more time, I appreciate, I'm going to have to take a trip to El Vomitorio.
I hear that.
I can't take it anymore, Mike.
I know.
So I'm going to talk about something else.
Okay, that's cool.
Quickly before, I wanted to talk about the campaign, but even before I get there, I just wanted to observe that lately I've been, you know, watching things like The Daily Show and satire and reading right. cartoons in the paper and all that kind of jazz, you know, political cartoons.
Right.
And something astonishing has happened. I don't find anything funny anymore.
You know, I'm getting to that point, too. I know what you mean.
Because it's just, it's creepy. It's gotten creepy. It's not like we're poking fun. It's something that has any base of reality or intelligence or rationalization, you know.
Uh-huh.
But what I wanted to say was that the wide field of Democratic candidates is very exciting to me, and it's not because somewhere in there is our next president. That's clear, obviously. But mm-hmm. what if you look at it, what you really have to see is possibly the next cabinet, or members of the next cabinet.
Yeah.
And so you've got some really intelligent, thought-worthy people in there, I think, who would really do very well in the White House and in the administration. Conversely, if you want to really get freaked out and see a horror show, you have to look at the Republican field.
Oh!
And there, too, is a potential cabinet.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, and so, you know, I was thinking that what I would put out to moderates tonight, if moderates indeed listen to this program, is that, you know, look at that field. Don't look at whether Hagel will be president or McCain will be president. Look at McCain as a Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Look at Giuliani as an Attorney General.
Yeah.
That's what you have to look at, you know.
That's very true. Yeah, that's a good point, AJ.
Yes, sir. So in any case, I've been away, but I'm I've been really looking forward to talking to you and connecting with you, and I've been listening to you as often as possible, and you are really on tonight. So
well, thanks a lot. Just very quickly, are you living in the Catskills, or are you just working there this weekend?
Yeah, no. My wife and I moved up here 5 years ago from New Jersey, and we built a straw bale house.
Oh, okay. So you actually live there.
Yep, we actually live here, and she's actually stuck at work tonight and has an early start tomorrow, so she's listening on the computer. Hi, sweetie. And and we have a great place up here. It's all built of straw and stucco.
Well, God, next time I'm up there, I'm going to come by.
You are invited.
I got to leave. Thanks, AJ.
Peace, Mike.
All right, buddy, stay in touch.
Bye.
I'm afraid of increased
weight. I am basically frightened.
No!
Teacher, teach me to read because I have learning problems.
You'll make out. Seem to make a good beginning. Someone else ends up winning. Don't seem fair. Don't you care?
Hang on. Help me not in way. I'll be there as fast as I can.
25 before the hour. Back your phone call. Scott is calling from New Hampshire. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
I just wanted to get your take on this new revelation. You spoke a little bit about it last night about Matt Sanchez. And as far as that relates to Jeff Gannon and Foley and Haggard, and is there just an endless line of these people?
Well, I guess the story to me is not that Matt Sanchez is gay. The story to me is the fact that because he claimed that as a 35 or 36 year old sophomore at Columbia University, he was being harassed because of his conservative views. Oh, poor baby. I mean, I can't imagine a former Marine being, you know, putting up with any kind of harassment at a university at all. But because he complained of that, the cockroaches on the right, Sean Hannity and she whose name I don't want to mention, all these people pick up on that. They smell some kind of anti-liberal or anti-Democrat out there, and they immediately bring that person onto their programs. So the story to me is the fact that the research departments for Ann Coulter, oops, or Sean Hannity, or any of these right-wing filth, the research departments, they never check. They could put on somebody who's murdered 13 children if that person says, you know, I really don't like Hillary. Oh, my God, grab that guy. You see what I'm saying? So to me, the story is these dumb bastards put a gay porn star on their programs. And I don't see anything wrong with a gay porn star. If that's what he wants to do, that's what he wants to do. What's wrong with it is that all these people are so anti-gay. And the reason they're anti-gay is for a lot of them is because they are deeply in the closet themselves. And if they would just say, look, yeah, I'm gay, so what? You want to fight about it? It'd all be over. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, self-hating homosexuals.
Well, self-hating anybody when you get down to it. It's just astonishing to me. That's all. I mean, I don't know how to deal with that. I really don't. Most of the folks that I know, who are gay are just totally out and proud of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, their attitude is, you know, this is who I am. If you don't like it, well then go somewhere else. Leave me alone. You don't have to like me. If you don't like me and I happen to be gay, okay, that's fine. You know, don't try to screw up my life. You know, to me, that's very simple.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Absolutely. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call. I just wonder why. Well, I know why, but the Republicans have made such an issue out of a person's sexual orientation. Jesus Christ, why not make an issue out of somebody's shoe size or their hair color? I mean, Republicans make issues out of someone's sexual orientation or their skin color or their religion. They're just divisive bastards, aren't they? Just anything to divide us. Anything to divide us. Divide and conquer. It's such an old concept, you know. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll hate the gays. You hate the Negroes. We get someone over here to hate the Jews. We get someone over there to hate the union members. And someone back here, let's say, yeah, I hate the women, the bitches who want control of their own bodies and privacy. Let's hate them. Now we'll get a group over here. What are you folks going to hate? The Palestinians. Okay, hate them. Now we'll get somebody over here to hate the... I don't know. This is what Republicans do, though. This is what they devote their lives to doing. This is what their churches are about. This is what their political parties are about. Ann Coulter is the face of the Republican Party. She is the Republican Party. So is Sean Hannity. These two, and wait till you find out. I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure at some point... Sean Hannity and Ann Coulter are going to be discovered in some sleazy flophouse, and some enterprising photographer from the New York Post will be hanging outside the window. Oh, God. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Ask Newt Gingrich, right? Huh? Nothing wrong with being a fornicating adulterer. You can turn around and a few years later confess your sins on a sick quasi-religious program and go on to run for the presidency. You know, it doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean a thing. Unless you're Bill Clinton. If you're Bill Clinton and try that, you'll be, you'll be disbarred. You'll go to hell. Your mama will die. Your stepfather will die. You'll forever be a pariah. Republicans will use their name, his name to scare the children. Bill Clinton's going to get you! You know, and then you have people like Newt Gingrich, the most hypocritical son of a bitch ever to be in American politics. And I say that unreservedly, the most hypocritical son of a bitch ever to be in American politics. Maybe not the most corrupt, although that's debatable too. But certainly the most hypocritical son of a bitch ever to be in American politics. There he is, ladies and gentlemen, the Newtster. What a thug. What a punk. What a hypocrite. Oh, well. Jesus loves him. Mike is calling from Sacramento. Mike, welcome to the program. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Yes, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. How are you doing, Mr. Mike Malloy? I have a lot to say tonight, so I'm going to make it real quick because we're compressed for time. I pay attention to a lot of reports overseas in relation to energy reports. And I just discovered that Exxon is what's causing the artificial inflation of the prices in the United States, because they had just accidentally admitted over the weekend that they're doing a buyback of their stocks. And it's based on a 10 to 15-year buyback cycle. They're putting $28 billion into it annually. And they said by accident in their press release that they need to have the price per barrel to be over $50 a barrel. And that obviously will keep the prices around close to between $2 to $3 a gallon. The Saudis have already said they wanted it below 50. So there is a dispute, and the Saudis have indicated that they paid a high price for making a lot of money. But obviously the American counterparts are doing some kind of stock buyback, and I would advise the Americans in general to do research, find out who are the people that are investing and buying stocks into Exxon and other companies, and buy hybrid vehicles, convert their engines to all electric, because I have a feeling that the reports indicate that if we go to war with Iran, prices will go up to $8 to $10 a gallon, and we'll stay there for about a year and a half. If the Al-Qaeda's were almost successful in hitting a Saudi refinery a few months back, if they were successful, it would have pushed the price per barrel over $100 a barrel. It would have been devastating for the U.S. economy.
Well, okay, I get what you're saying. Of course, sometimes salvation comes in very strange packages. If the price of oil went to over $100 a barrel, and the price of gasoline shot up to $7, $8, $9 a gallon, yeah, there would be some financial chaos in this country at the outset. But we're an enterprising people, and I think in the long term, the best thing that could happen to all of us would be to stop using fossil fuels.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I think that we're going to be paying $2 to $3 a gallon for the next 5 to 10 years. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why they want to do this $28 billion buyback program. There's a reason why they're buying back these stocks from people.
Well, they're the worst, the worst, most socially irresponsible, corrupt, filthy, murderous corporation in the history of corrupt, filthy, murderous, socially irresponsible corporations. ExxonMobil is the worst of the worst. And if these Christians are right, and there is some carefully crafted hell someplace, every single person who is on the board or an executive with ExxonMobil will wind up in the hottest, most vile, putrid, corpse-floating section of hell when they leave the mortal coil here. Mike, I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Have a good evening.
All right, sir. Take care.
I was going to say, just if oil ever did get above $100 a barrel, I think then there might be a chance of impeachment.
Oh, you,
that could do it.
You dreamer, you. You absolute dreamer. No, the media would spin it that Hugo Chavez was responsible, or those dirty Palestinians, or Al-Qaeda, because they won't leave our oil fineries alone in Saudi Arabia and Iraq and... No, it would be fun, but I like your optimism, Kathy.
Is this like a huge distillery?
Oh my God, the program's almost over. How did that happen? Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your program, or answered your answered your calls from our flagship station KPHX in Phoenix. Thanks to our senior correspondent up in the Great North in Minnesota, Chris. Thanks to Mark Marshall, who is our webmaster, and the moderators at MikeMolloy.com. And I'm on my hands and knees here. Really, please go to NovaMRadio.com and join up. Okay. Become a founder of this network. I had an email tonight from a listener who doesn't like to use PayPal. Fair enough. You can send a check via snail mail to 824 Washington. 824 Washington. Phoenix 85034. Address it to and make your check out to Nova M. That's all you have to do. I haven't heard from Suzanne. Suzanne, if you're still listening, did we get those extra signatures on the draftgore.com website? You can email me if you can do it within the next 2 minutes, Suzanne. Nick is calling from Oklahoma. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hey,
I was just wanting to call and I just found this radio station about a week ago or so on my Sirius radio, and I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
One thing I want to kind of call you out on a little bit is you're constantly lumping all Christians together in one big group and just throwing us in with the Republicans and the pig man and Bush and Cheney, and that's absolutely not true. I mean, at least 50% of us are liberals, are Democrats.
Well, I don't doubt that that's probably true, and I'll certainly take the correction, but I have a question for you. I have a question for you, Nick. If that is true, let's assume it is, why do we never hear from that 50%? Why is that 50% not making the litmus test for Republican members of Congress? Why is that 50% not all over media making their demands? The 50% that is not Republican. Why do we never hear from them?
Because we're just kind of swept aside by the Christian Coalition and by the Southern Baptist Association and all, just like, you know, half the stuff y'all report about on the...
Well, you do know that the Southern Baptist Conference is the second largest Christian organization in the United States. It's second only to the Catholic Church, I believe. Now, I don't know. I'm asking you. This is not a challenge. This is a question. Are you saying that 50% of the members of the Southern Baptist Conference are liberals or Democrats? I don't think so.
Most of the churches that I've gone to pay not a lick of attention to what the Southern Baptist Association is. It's just like, yeah, whatever, you know, they're a bunch of idiots. We aren't going to listen to them.
Well, I hope that's the case, but again, my question is simply if 50% of the Christians in this country are not right-wingers or conservatives, I applaud that. I celebrate it. But where are they? Other than Jim Wallace, the guy who publishes Sojourners magazine, I believe it's Sojourners, other than Jim Wallace, Reverend Jim Wallace, I'm trying to think of nationally known. Now, I know, you're right. There are a lot of local preachers and ministers who are Presbyterian or Baptist or Methodist who want nothing to do with Bush and his wars and his bigotry and his killing. I know that I have lumped all Christians in with right-wingers and Republicans. And you're right. That is not true. A, B, it's not fair. And I do apologize for that. I get carried away sometimes because the only ones I hear about, the only ones who get the media attention, are these right wingers who have so corrupted the Christian faith. You know,
yeah,
go ahead.
They can't even truly call themselves Christians. I mean, the very basis of the Christian religion is peace, forgiveness, and understanding. I mean, when Jesus was on the cross, did he cry out, "Father, give me vengeance"? No, he cried out, "Father, please forgive them."
Well,
anyone who claims to follow this religion should be totally against anything and everything that Bush and Cheney stand for and this war. I mean, it just pisses me off, all this Christian big media things like the Southern Baptist Association and the Christian Coalition standing up saying, "War, war, war, go, 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 give us vengeance."
Right.
That's not what they should stand for.
Well, I agree. We're certainly on the same page here. And if you and I were sitting in logic class in college right now, the Venn diagram proof would show that not all Christians are nutty, but all Christian right wingers are.
Yeah.
and the kind of Christianity they practice has nothing to do with Jesus. You'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, the kind of Christianity they practice is the same type as the Crusaders practiced in the Middle Ages. Kill everyone who isn't a Christian, burn them at the stake, and convert them at sword point.
Well, that's the kind of the sword I scream about, and they have been on the ascendancy since the late 80s, early 90s, with the Christian Coalition, with Pat Robertson, with some of these right-wingers. But your point is taken, Nick. I am guilty of what you're charging me with, and I'll try to make a point to make a distinction from here on.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to let you know that there are lots of us out there who are right there with you and Tom Hartman and all right. the rest of y'all.
Fair enough. I hear you. Thanks for checking in, Nick. Take care. I'll see you Monday, Truth Seekers. Have a great weekend. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I'm going straight.
Oh, yeah. And have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.